Welcome to Hardwood Handicappers with Zach Cohen, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Today we're recapping an insane Game 4, previewing a bit of Game 5 between the Knicks and Spurs, and getting into some off-season stuff with Justin Termini of the NBA today with Eddie Johnson from the SiriusXM NBA Radio Channel 86. Justin, what's going on? We really love having you on, and thank you for making the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't sleep much last night. I'm down here in San Antonio getting ready for Game 5. If I was in New York, I'm not sure that I'd be joining you because I'd probably be up all night with everybody else out there. I'm not sure I would have made it back to my hotel room safely, so I'm glad I'm out of the Northeast. That was so crazy last night. It might be spilling into, like, New Jersey and Connecticut as well.
Yeah, my sister was at the game. She was sending me a picture of, like, Carmelo Anthony in the streets, and it was insane. It looked like it was absolute madness in Manhattan after that one. Some good, some bad. You know, you don't need to throw stuff at Victor Wembanyama, but hey, it was an absolutely insane game. I understand why they are so excited. I just wanted to kind of start with, you know, 29-point deficit in that third quarter, and the Knicks come back to pull off the greatest comeback in NBA Finals history. And there's all types of history in this one. In the last 70 years, one of the ones that I found that was interesting was 46-point difference between the first half and second half for the Spurs. Only team in NBA history to have 76 or more in the first half or 30 or fewer in the second half. And just an insane collapse, but also the Knicks doing their job and coming back as one of these teams that we've seen over the last couple of years just does not quit ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on where you're living, maybe, or who you were rooting for, depending how you look at it. I'm down in San Antonio. I'm sure they're cursing out De'Aaron Fox for one turnover after another when he's supposed to be the floor general and he's supposed to be the mature guy on the team. Absolutely insane decision-making for him, which even, like, dated back to the beginning of the end of the third quarter where they're up big, and he has two sloppy turnovers, and he's kind of laughing. He wasn't locked in. And then the historically poor decision, which is going to go down as one of the biggest flubs, not just in NBA Finals history, maybe in the history of, like, professional sports overall on that stage, which saves Josh Hart. Then you got Wembanyama missing the free throws. So people cursing them out down in San Antonio. And then on the other end, like in New York, or if you're rooting for the Knicks, you're talking about, you know, one of the great comebacks of all time. You're talking about Mike Brown's decision to go to Alvarado late, which was a stroke of genius. You're talking about, you know, OG Anunoby with, you know, and I'm racking my head to come up with a bigger block in NBA history. You had LeBron in 2016, which was a game seven, but still, I think it's up there with that. You had Bill Russell, Jack Coleman back in 1957, double overtime, Russell's rookie year. Like, I can't think outside of those two blocks, a bigger one than the rebound. To me, it's got to be Bosch with the rebound that preceded the Ray Allen shot there, Zach, as maybe the biggest rebound in NBA history. This one, maybe right behind that. And then it's one of the great game winners of all time. So, I mean, depending on what side you're looking at, you got all sorts of history to break down today.
Yeah, probably like the greatest 12-second stretch in NBA Finals history. I'd be like, that is pretty reasonable to say. And OG, man, like, that was some performance. I mean, we've kind of talked all series long over here at VSiN about how good Cat's been, how shaky Brunson's been. You got the best Brunson game last night of the series, but OG still stole the show with, you know, 32 points, awesome defense, and like you said, an insane chase down block, and then the tip-in, which, not a normal tip-in. Like, the ball was behind him. It was high in the air. I know that Wemby wasn't down there, but actually making that shot was something else.
Yeah, I mean, and also, it was a smart play by Jalen Brunson. I'm sure Mike Brown, as they set it up, because Brunson takes a really quick shot, but it might have been as good as you were going to get because he took it before Wembanyama was able to get out to him. But it also, like, you know, left enough, like, it drew Wembanyama out to the three-point line. And I'm sure that this was drawn up or at least talked about in the huddle. And by drawing Wembanyama out to Brunson taking that three, it leaves him out of the paint. It allows Anunoby to attack. He wasn't being guarded because they ended up doubling Brunson, left him the free lane. So That wasn't by accident. I don't think that was pure luck. I think that is something that the Knicks sort of planned for, is take the early shot, give us an opportunity to get the offensive rebound. It's the opposite of what Mitch Johnson and San Antonio did in game two, if you remember, where Wembanyama takes the shot as time expires, and they didn't really have a chance to follow it up. So I thought that that was, you know, some people are out there, it's too quick of a shot for Jalen Brunson. He was 32 feet away. No, I thought that was great. And then Anunoby had to make what you mentioned. Wasn't just a normal tip in, which was just super acrobatic.
Yeah, and I feel like just a lot of things are going to be lost kind of in the mix as we talk about this game, because the end of it was just, it was madness. But I do think, you know, things happened in the second half that kind of slowly allowed this to happen. And you mentioned the Fox turnovers in the third quarter, some of those throwaways. It's also really bad shot selection and kind of strong defense in the Knicks in that third quarter. Like, I feel like it got down to around 20 and you almost felt it happening, because this Knicks team has done it before. I don't want to say I expected them to actually win, but I was talking to a couple of my Knicks fans friends during the game, and I said, this is going to get really close. Like, you could feel San Antonio getting tight. One point, I think they took 6 or 7 threes in a row, and New York just kept doing the right things and chipping away at it. And it was just a really slow process, but at the same time, felt really quick.
Yeah, I mean, 3 of 17 from three in the second half. It's almost like they were like, all right, well, we were red hot in the first half, 14-26, which I think was an NBA record. And like, well, they're just going to continue to take those shots. They're going to fall. You're not going to stay hot throughout the course of an entire game. It just never happens. And then the human nature is maybe you're going to take your foot off the gas here a little bit. That's what I thought they did as well. Give credit to New York for keep plugging away. I mean, some teams are like, all right, we're just going to cash it in. We saw Oklahoma City do that in the previous series, right? Where I think it was game 6, where they punted on it and they sat SGA for the entire fourth quarter and just said, all right, we'll try and save our energy for game 7. They don't do that. Brunson, I think, played the entire second half. We saw it with Anthony Edwards. He's shaking everybody's hands. He's hugging everybody towards the tail end of the game 6 in the elimination game. And they're like, all right, we give up. We're not even going to make an effort here. And that's with their season on the line. They didn't even have another game after that. Whereas New York just keeps plugging away. So you give them just the ultimate credit for that. And then on the San Antonio side, again, like three different things. Like, I place the blame, and I don't know where you sit, Zach, on three different people. One is, you know, the head coach, because anytime you give your team a huge lead like that, or you give your head coach a lead like that, he has to be able to massage it. You call timeouts in the perfect spots. You settle guys down. You basically say, all right, our shot selection needs to improve here. Mitch Johnson did not do that. You place it on Wembanyama. Again, he's come out and he's just 22 years of age. And we've seen other guys choke in big spots early on in their careers. LeBron at the age of 26 gets outscored by Jason Terry in entire finals. He has 8 points in a finals game. He's getting guarded by J.J. Barea. He can do nothing. He's recovered from that. Magic Johnson had 1984. It's Tragic Johnson. He recovers from that. I don't want to say that Wembanyama won't recover, but I mean, you're talking about, big picture-wise, what do you remember in this series from Wembanyama? You remember the pass off Steph Castle's back. You remember the missed game winner in game 2 just after that. You remember the free throws with 1:47 left last night. He's got a chance to make it a 3-point game. He misses both of those free throws. Hasn't been good for Wembanyama, so you place some blame there. I think he missed 10 of 11 shots at one point, as Mike Breen pointed out in the broadcast. But then most of all, you have to blame De'Aaron Fox, because the Wembanyama stuff at least was physical, right? Like, he's actually has to shoot the free throws. That's a little bit mental as well, but he misses them. Okay, it's happened before in the past. You can't make a decision like that, especially when you're the veteran point guard. The only reason he's even out there on the floor over Dylan Harper at times, over Steph Castle at times, is because he's the veteran. Those guys have been better. They've shot better. But you say, okay, I can still understand Mitch Johnson having Fox out there on the floor, because at least he knows how to take care of the ball. He can settle guys down. He's going to make the right decision. And he can't do that. That's one of the biggest flubs in NBA. Like, that's basically, you know, Bill Buckner, the ball between his legs, which, oddly enough, we saw 2 of those in the final minute and a half, because that would have been Josh Hart if they didn't win. It's Frank Selvey back in 1962. But again, that's physical with Selvey, where Selvey misses that little baseline jumper from 8 feet away. It goes to overtime. The Celtics end up beating the Lakers. but this was a mental mistake. And just like that Selby shot, it could end up deciding who wins the championship. Because I really felt like if San Antonio tied this thing up at two with two more games on their home floor, they win. So Darren Fox right there with that decision cost San Antonio a championship.
Yeah, I think like the blame pie is definitely a very large majority is Mitch Johnson and De'Aaron Fox. One thing I'll say about Fox is like I do kind of wonder if he's still really banged up. It's because a little bit earlier in the game, he had a fast break where he had like three or four steps on somebody and ended up having to actually pull the ball out, which oddly enough, he made the right decision there. Didn't do it on the final play of the game. But I do kind of wonder if he just doesn't have the burst that he thinks he has in his mind. And either way, though, it was a boneheaded play. And Johnson, I think you said it really well. Like the timeout management, I don't think was great. I don't think he was able to settle down his guys. Like, I understand this is a really, really young team. And almost the story of the series is that this team is too young. I feel like they've now controlled 70% of it and they're down 3-1. But this team makes a lot of boneheaded mistakes. And don't think Johnson did a really good job of getting them settled. I think that, you know, at one point, like, there was Wemby taking a three. They got an offensive rebound. Wemby went right back up with another three. It was just such bad shot selection when they were up big, and they just allowed it all to happen. There was very little resistance for the comeback.
Yeah, and this is part of the reason why you would pick the Knicks, even if you think San Antonio is more talented. And there's a lot of evidence that San Antonio is the more talented team, right? But it almost comes to a mental aspect. And we've seen this in the past. It's not the first time. I mean, we saw it in 2011 where Dallas has the veterans, right? They have Dirk, who's been there before. They got Jason Kidd. Like, they knew that was their last opportunity to win. And they just outmatured the Heat, who I think were it was a 1-1 series. And then they were up big in game three, and then LeBron and Dwayne Wade start to celebrate a little bit, and then it's like, all right, well, you celebrated too soon. Dallas comes back, they win the game, they win the series. I think we saw it in 2022. Boston was probably the more talented team than Golden State, but Golden State had the veterans. Golden State had been there before, and they took advantage of that. And I think that's what we're seeing here is, you know, San Antonio can clearly match this team with talent, maybe even exceed them, but they're making just mental mistake after mental mistake. The Knicks aren't doing that.
Yeah, and you're just seeing, like you said, too, like Fox being the experienced player on this team is getting the opportunity to go out and win the games. But at the same time, it's like no touches for Dylan Harper in the final, like, 6 minutes of the game. Like, that's your best offensive creator, at least on the perimeter. That was disgusting to me. Yeah. And, yeah, like, the decision-making just not good enough. Fox, even with the ball in his hands, barely touched the paint. It was a lot of jumpers. So I just would have liked to have seen some different looks from San Antonio. Meanwhile, New York, you said it, great decision to play Jose Alvarado. Think that, you know, I'm a big Mikal Bridges fan, but they made the right decision kind of sticking with the guys that made the comeback. And Alvarado was so good down the stretch.
Oh, I mean, he hit. So credit to two guys there, Leon Rose for making that acquisition at the break, and then Mike Brown for inserting him in the life. Like, how many coaches aren't going to give the guy the opportunity? Like, and I love Tom Thibodeau. I don't think he should have been fired. Is Tom Thibodeau playing Jose Alvarado? Is he playing Jordan Clarkson the game prior, even though the Knicks lost that game? Like, Clarkson played a big role, and he makes a decision like that, and Alvarado hit two of the biggest shots in the game, and it's going to kind of get lost in the mix. But he had a two-pointer right after, I believe, Fox hit the mid-range jumper to kind of get, you know, to quell the concerns there for San Antonio. I think it was a five-point game. Fox made it a seven-point game. Then Alvarado came back, cut it to five again, and then he hit the big three a possession later after Wembanyama hit the little mid-ranger. So he had two of the biggest shots of the game, and then, you know, he brings the ball up the court after the block there from Anunoby. He gets it to, you know, they called the timeout. So, no, he was just brilliant. It gave him an extra playmaker on the floor next to Brunson, which I think had been an issue throughout the course of the series, give Mike Brown credit for that.
Yeah, it was something that I was talking about a little bit before this game is that I thought that they needed another ball handler, that the other guys just weren't cutting it, and Brunson was using too much energy getting the ball up the floor. So bringing Alvarado in took some pressure off him. And yeah, not even just the two makes, but also the play where he drives in, draws Wemby, and kicks to OG Anunoby in the corner. I think that was the cut it to four. Just so many big plays from him. So it was really a tremendous comeback. I do want to talk a little bit more about it, you know, in the context of game five. But first, I did want to say the NBA finals are here and the edges are smaller than ever. VSiN Pro gives you the advanced analytics, player prop projections, and expert insights that serious bettors rely on when every game matters most. Try it for only $9.99 for your first month and see what sharps are using to beat the books. head to vsin.com/subscribe and check out all of your subscription options. So yeah, I mentioned I wanted to talk a little bit more about it. Some just crazy things in terms of like betting for this game. The Knicks got to 22-1 at one point on the live line in that game. Spurs team total in the game was 107.5. They had 76 at halftime and landed on 106. So terrible beat for people that took the over. Ooh. And yeah, just in terms of the actual series, we were so, so close to getting 2-2 heading back to game five. Now you have New York at -500. And I guess I'm wondering where you see it going from here. Do you think that the Spurs have, you know, one last push in them to win this game where you are right now in San Antonio? And do you expect to see a game six?
I do not expect to see a game six. I just don't see how you can mentally recover from it. I mean, you think of the tough losses in Spurs history. I mean, you had that game six we already referenced with the Bosch rebound and the Ray Allen shot there on the corner. And even that team couldn't recover, right, the following game. And that was a mature team. I mean, that, and again, it went down to the wire in game seven. I don't want to act like they got blown out. But I talked to Danny Green about that a couple of weeks ago, and he said it was really difficult to recover and get themselves motivated. And again, that team had Popovich as their head coach. They had Tim Duncan. They had Manu. They had Tony Parker. Like, those guys had been there before, and they were probably the more talented team than Miami that year. They proved it a year later when they smoked them in one of the more lopsided finals of all time. Even they couldn't mentally recover. So I don't see how this version of the Spurs is going to mentally recover. And then on top of that, I already saw some of the statistics in regards to where these tickets are going to be sold. Apparently, according to these websites, 37% of the tickets have been sold to people in New York for game five, 12% from New Jersey. So that's 49% right there. That's half the stadium. And I got to tell you, I was at games one and two. I've covered finals dating back to 2014. That was my first one. And I have never seen anything like how the Knicks fan overtook San Antonio. And now that they got an opportunity to clinch, and I'm sure the Spur fan is going to be more willing to sell their ticket, I expect it to be well over half the stadium as Knicks fans on Saturday night. It's going to be one of the more embarrassing scenes we have witnessed in home court history for any sport. I would say that it is going to be a majority Knicks fans on Saturday night, and I think that helps them close it out.
Yeah, it's crazy because this is a really good fan base, too, that the Spurs have. And the fact they're going to be almost outnumbered in their own building, it really shows you how well those Knicks fans travel. Almost wonder how they would have gotten it done against Oklahoma City. But I kind of think that they would have found a way to have 25% of that crowd being Knicks fans, even with, you know, against probably the best fan base in the NBA outside of the Knicks. So they are traveling and they are enjoying it. I have one buddy who's booked his flight down there a couple days ago. So sure, he'll enjoy himself. I do kind of wonder if, like, the spread is kind of begging people to take the Knicks. That's kind of always the way my mind works. Like, it was 5.5 last night. I do feel like everyone's going to have that thought that, like, the Spurs are completely done. So maybe we do see something from the Spurs.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's going to take another one of those Greg Popovich team meetings to get to
the, I mean,
to
they're good enough. Yeah. I mean, San Antonio could easily be up 3-1 in the series. It's just boneheaded mistake. This could easily be flipped because they've outplayed them for a majority of these games. I mean, listen, the first quarter, they've been down by double digits in each of the first four quarters throughout this series. So, like, San Antonio is good enough. It really shouldn't be. Like, 3-1 doesn't tell the story. Again, the more mature team, I'm going to have to give the edge to them.
Yeah, and that was one thing, too. It's like they go down double digits every game. I texted one of my friends like when they were down like 7. I'm like, they just want to go down 12 so they can get comfortable. They just enjoy the fight. It's kind of crazy to watch. But I guess what I want to ask you just one last thing about this series before I get your thoughts quickly on the Celtics. Thoughts on finals MVP? Jalen Brunson's still the favorite at -135, which is hard for me to wrap my head around. OG Anunoby number two on the board at +280, Victor Wembanyama +390, and Cat all the way down to pre-series price of 20-1.
I don't understand how it's not OG Anunoby. You know, he's their best defender. He hit the two big threes at the outset of the fourth quarter. I believe that was in game two when Brunson was on the bench in order to get them back into it. Last night, he had the game-saving chase-down block. He had the rebound. He had the putback. So he had the most important plays of the series. He's shooting 56% from three. He's shooting 58% from the floor, whereas Brunson is shooting shooting under 40% for the series. It reminds me of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum a couple of years ago in 2024, where Tatum led the Celtics in points, rebounds, and assists. Okay, led him in every single category. But Jaylen Brown was slightly more efficient, not even tremendously more efficient. He had the defensive assignment there on Luka, so he got points for that. And he hit the biggest shot of the series at the tail end of game three. And the media gave him finals MVP. Well, guess what? I think the gap maybe be bigger here between OG and Brunson than it was between Tatum and Brown. I would say that, in OG and Anobe, to me, even during this entire run, start to finish. Now, he dealt with the hamstring. I think that hurt him a little bit. I thought he was playing at a higher level throughout this entire postseason run than Jaylen Brown was. And Jaylen Brown got Eastern Conference Finals MVP and Finals MVP. Like, who had the better run? This guy's more efficient than Jaylen Brown. He's a better defender than Jaylen Brown. So I would give the nod here to OG Anunoby for the award. I don't understand what Vegas is thinking. But again, the voters have got it wrong before. They got it wrong in 2015. That was pathetic. LeBron and Iguodala got votes, and the award should have gone to Steph Curry. He didn't get one single vote. They got it wrong in 1980, I feel, where Magic had the incredible Game 6, but Kareem basically averaged 30 and 15 up to that point, and I thought he should have got the award. So it's not like the voters. I think they got the MVP of the season wrong this year. I would have given it to Jokic. That's who I voted for. They voted for SGA. So we've seen voters get things wrong again. My guess is Brunson wins it. I would vote for OG.
Yeah, and that is what's being baked in. It's like there's always human error with this. Brunson can have a big game in game five, and all of a sudden they just completely forget what they saw the first four games of the series. But OG has been the best player for the Knicks to this point. He'd actually been right there, and at least above Brunson before that game last night, and then he goes out and plays an awesome two-way game. So, yeah, the 58-56-92 shooting splits out of this world. 2.5 stocks per game. I do think that he's the guy that should ultimately be the finals MVP. But you started talking about the Celtics in that segment. I know you are a Celtics guy. Did want to transition a little bit over there to the offseason a little bit. And I've been excited to talk to you about this a little bit.
Yeah.
Know you are a big Boston fan. There's been some noise around the team lately, probably self-brought on by Jaylen Brown for making some strong, anti-Tatum comments without actually saying his name. I'm just kind of wondering, do you see Brown as a long-term part of this core? And do you think they get involved for Giannis Antetokounmpo? I know it always kind of seems easy to say no. You might not think they will. But I did just see, I believe, unless I got fooled by a fake Twitter, Bill Simmons saying that he's fully anticipating the Celtics to get back in, which is not mean he is, reporting news, but he has a good pulse on the team too.
Yeah. I mean, I think he up to this point, Bill had been saying that he didn't think that they were going to make a move. And I guess he changed that last night in this podcast. I'm listening to it, but I haven't got to that part yet. Yeah. I've been on the Giannis bandwagon the entire time. Not that I think it's without risk. I mean, Giannis Antetokounmpo is a guy that's got lower leg injuries. Okay. He's older than Jaylen Brown, lower leg injuries could foreshadow, especially with the calf, an Achilles issue. And he's not going to recover from an Achilles issue like Kevin Durant. I don't know if you believe this, but I don't think he'd recover like a Jason Tatum has already or early on, how Kevin Durant did, because those guys have a jump shot. Those guys can kill you from the perimeter. They're not as reliant on their athleticism, even though they're athletic. Giannis Antetokounmpo blows out his Achilles. He's never going to be the same player because he relies on that push, getting to the rim. He's never developed the outside shot. Even with that said, if Jaylen Brown and maybe some picks are the price for Giannis Antetokounmpo, I don't see how you can turn that down, especially with the direction of the rest of the league. This is going to be the worst that the Spurs are. You don't have a chance of beating them with this version of the Celtics. But if you add, because this version of the Celtics is a known, if you add on to Antetokounmpo, maybe you still don't beat them. Maybe it even makes you a worse team, and Giannis has lost a step, and Giannis and Tatum just don't fit into the lineup together. But you have to take risks when there's teams as good as OKC, there's teams as good as San Antonio or Young, even the Knicks, this version of the Knicks. I don't think the Celtics, like that was, people thought they were going to come out of the East Boston at the beginning, but they said the one thing that could stop them is New York. They don't match up well against them. So Giannis changes all that. Plus Boston's playing style. style has got a little stale where they rely on the three. We saw San Antonio rely on the three last night in the second half, and it cost them. So I think it's not without risk, but the gap between Jaylen Brown and Giannis Antetokounmpo is not even close. You need to make that move if you can make that move, and you need to take a risk. You can't sit there and say, you know, plus if you got a guy this good wanted to go to Boston, Boston's not New York, Boston's not LA, it's not Miami. If you can send a message to the rest of the league that we've got a top 20 player of all time that wants to be in our city, I think you have to make that move. And then if he's at the top of his game, Tatum's at the top of his game, you got two top 5 to 7 players in the sport. Maybe still not favored to beat San Antonio, New York, or OKC, but that gives you a chance.
Yeah, and I like what you said about like kind of like the shot profile. They take too many threes right now. Bringing in one of the best downhill drivers in the league would definitely change things quite a bit. You'd still have all of the gunners like Pritchard and White around him and Tatum, but you know, just adding the element of having somebody that can attack the basket and dominate in the paint would definitely help quite a bit. I guess I'll just ask this, like, if the Giannis thing doesn't happen, just because it does actually seem like it's pretty close and far down the road with Miami, anything else like smaller or like around the fringes that you would expect to see from the Celtics this summer that you'd like to see?
No, I mean, like there's other Jaylen Brown stuff about like, you know, Trey Murphy down in New Orleans and maybe diversifying a little bit, getting guys that'll move the ball a little quicker, because I think that is important as well. Not only do they shoot a lot of threes, they do a lot of dribbling, and most of the dribbling with your head down is Jaylen Brown. So, you know, there's stuff like that. Plus, with both those guys getting paid so much money in the second apron, if you can turn Brown into multiple players, I think that helps. If you're going to hold on to Tatum and Brown, then I think you have to shore up the big man rotation. Cato was a great regular season center. Does he cut it in the postseason? Same with Luka Garza. I think the Vucevic experiment was a disaster. You're probably not going back to that. And I think one of the, not that they were going to compete with this Knicks team, but I felt the reason they couldn't beat Philadelphia is in the past, they had a Embiid stopper in Al Horford. Not that you're going to bring back him, even though he can be a free agent this offseason, but he was a guy at the very least, he was like the, the kryptonite for Embiid. So you're going to have to bring in, I think, another big that you can give postseason minutes to. I think that would be another thing if you're not going to do the big thing, which is find a trading partner with Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, and one of the things I was kind of banging the table for during the regular season was them actually being the ones that went out and got Ivica Zubats. In the end, I don't think they would have been able to actually outbid what the Pacers for him. But that is definitely a position of need. I think that, like you said it really well, they did a really good job of plugging that gap in the regular season, but definitely need a proven playoff contributor at that spot this season. But yeah, Justin, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. Know you're down there busy. I think it's going to be awesome in game 5, even if the atmosphere is very pro-Knicks. I think you're in for a really good game. So what are you expecting in terms of that? Do you think it's going to be, you know, if it's the Knicks, do you think it's going to be a blowout?
I don't know if it's going to be a blowout, but yeah, I mean, I could see that. Knicks get off to a fast start. They can smell the championship. The crowd takes over because the crowd is going to be, I think, a majority of Knicks fans. So I could see a blowout. I will go. Yeah. If the Knicks win, I could see a blowout. But then you're asking yourself, well, if San Antonio wins, how are they going to do it? Because I don't trust San Antonio in these late game situations. So it's like, can San Antonio even win a game where it comes down to the final couple of possessions and, you know, they're trying to protect the lead? I mean, that might be difficult as well, just because they keep coming up short in those spots. And who are you going to trust? San Antonio, you're going to trust Jaylen Brunson, you're going to trust Brunson.
Yeah, that has been just really tough to watch, the half court execution for both teams. And I do think it's ultimately going to lead to something that probably would have happened eventually, but maybe you speed up the process. But I do think De'Aaron Fox will be number one on the list of players that they try to get out of there this summer. You need to just put the ball in the hands of Harper and Castle, and there's landing spots, I think.
Well, I hope so, because that contract is absurd. And now it probably becomes harder to move him. And, teams will maybe push a little bit, understanding maybe they want to get away from him because that could hurt their long-term build. And then you're going to have, like, listen, I talked to people that were in that locker room after, what was it? I believe game 2, where they closed with De'Aaron Fox and they lost. Maybe it was game 1, and Dylan Harper played 3 minutes in the fourth quarter.
Game 1.
Dylan Harper wasn't happy. Then you had this rumor, which I don't know if it's substantiated, where he like retweeted something and quickly deleted it about how bad De'Aaron Fox was down the stretch, comparing it to like Ben Simmons or James Harden, I believe it was. Like, you know, it's a competitive world. Like, even though you're on the same team, Dylan Harper is going to want a bigger role moving forward. So you might have to move him just because of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Luckily for them, there are teams out there that always get desperate. I do think like the Raptors or the Nets would potentially be interested if he becomes available. They're not going to get anything back for him. They might have to attach something to him. But yeah, exactly. It'll be interesting to see what they can do to kind of reshape their roster. But I think everybody wants to see more Castle and Harper and way less Fox.
100%. Listen, I'm one of them, especially after last night. I was calling for that even earlier in the series, and the only reason I understood them not doing it, again, is because you have a veteran out there on the floor that can make the right decision. Well, that went poof last night with one of the worst decisions in NBA Finals history.
Yeah. Well, before we get you out of here, I do want to quickly say attention to any listeners who are new to VSiN. Signing up for our free daily newsletter is a great way to catch up. Delivered straight to your inbox every morning, VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, and strategies for the day's betting menu. Sign up for free now at vsin.com/newsletter and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That's vsin.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. All right. Well, I said it before, started to say it at least, but I do really want to thank you for joining us today. You and Eddie do great work over on NBA Today. If you guys want to hear more of Justin, you can hear him and Eddie Johnson on NBA Today every weekday afternoon from 4 to 7 p.m. Eastern on the SiriusXM NBA Radio Channel 86 and the SiriusXM app. Follow Justin on X at Termini Radio. We will put that spelling somewhere in the text here. But yeah, Justin, thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the game. And yeah, hopefully we can do this again soon.
All right, Zach, appreciate it, buddy. I thought we started off the show strong and then we finished it strong. So we didn't kind of just like rest on our laurels and say, well, the first 15 minutes was good. Let's stop paying attention for the last 15 minutes. So we, you know, we ran through the line, unlike the Spurs, buddy.
Well, I did say goodbye to you, and then I read a read, and then I said goodbye to you again. So that was kind of my version of, you know, going up for the layup like Fox. So
you're still not Aaron Fox. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much again. And yeah, if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please throw us a like, a comment, a subscription on YouTube would go a long way. We're trying to grow that channel, Hardwood Handicappers, all one word. But until then, we will see you tomorrow for a Friday episode of Hardwood Handicappers. We'll be doing some picks for Game 5, but also some NBA draft stuff.